Today, for our Friday Forum webinar, we welcome UVA alum Jenny Ray LaRue. Jenny Ray earned her bachelor's from UVA in economics and proceeded to travel the world, write a book, sail the Atlantic, and develop global financial policy. She created a small consulting practice, worked for Bain, co-founded a tech company, and is now the managing director at Management Consulted, which she joined in 2010. Jenny Ray says that she loves helping others discover the same passion for work that she has found, and we are thrilled that she has offered to share her consulting expertise with us today. Here is Jenny Ray LaRue with Consulting 101.
Thanks so much, Miriam, for that awesome introduction. Hi, everybody. Looking forward very much to our session today. We give these presentations at universities all over the world, as well as for private firms and one-on-one. So we're really excited to be offering the Consulting 101 presentation for UVA folks today. Like Marianne mentioned, there are a few things that I just want to run through at the beginning of the presentation so you know a little bit about who I am, and then we'll dive into our content. As she also mentioned, for those of you that are just joining us, this is an interactive presentation. I'm inviting you to ask me questions throughout the whole presentation. You can do so by just typing a chat in your bar in the room. So as we get started, please just make sure that you pepper me with questions as we go. We should have quite an active group today, and we're really looking forward to answering your questions as well as sharing some of the information that I've got. Here's the agenda for what we're going to talk about today. First of all, we'll just share a little bit of the history of our company, Management Consulted. I'll talk a little bit about whether consulting is right for you and how you would know. Also, just give you a layout of the landscape of consulting firms that exist out there, as well as some of what you might look for if you are going to start your own consulting firm. Then the question, the ultimate question when it comes down to whether this is a viable both career choice or entrepreneurial choice for you is, are you right for consulting? And then finally, if so, what should you be doing now? This presentation will take us 1 hour, and I will take questions, as I mentioned at the beginning, as well as throughout, but we will really try to keep the exact 1 hour mark. So stay with me. It's not going to be slow. We're going to pepper through a whole bunch of information. She already gave a little bit of a background at the beginning of the presentation, but let me just give you guys a bit of my own background. I went to UVA, actually went to UVA originally to visit because my parents went to Auburn and they had the same school colors and were playing a premier test game at the beginning of the season. So in my senior year of high school, I went to visit UVA, fell in love with the campus, thought it was still too big for me, and ultimately decided to go there by flipping a coin at the end of my decision process. So as you can see, I have a little bit of a non-traditional way of doing things, and that was evidenced even in the way that I decided to come to school. I was an Eccles Scholar at UVA. I got 2 grants to study medicine in West Africa. I studied medical research focused on malaria, thought that I was going to be a doctor, and completed UVA with both all of my pre-medical requirements done as well as a degree in economics. And when I graduated, I decided that I, again, didn't want to do anything traditional. In fact, I swore that the 2 things that I would definitely not do were investment banking and consulting. I wanted to do something radical. I wanted to change the world. So I shaved my head, bought a backpack, and traveled for 9 months with my best friend to 14 different countries, all in the developing world, volunteering in 9 of them. And in the course of that time, I had a pretty tremendous interaction across multiple different sectors. One of the key things that I realized was that I don't love patient care, and I had a lot of opportunity to practice that while I was in the developing world, but I do love business, and that was a huge surprise to me. I thought that business people all just loved money and sold their soul for things that they cared about in gold and piles of riches. But as I discovered that business actually involves a lot of creative problem solving, I got very interested in it, and I moved to South Africa on a one-way ticket and started my own consulting firm. After working in the consulting firm for about 2 years, I went to a wedding in the United States. One of my friends at the wedding worked for a top consulting firm, McKinsey & Company, and she convinced me that a lot of the things that I was doing in my firm in South Africa were similar to what she did at McKinsey, but she had a different audience, different viability for what she was doing, and ultimately had a lot of opportunity for professional growth, whereas I was training myself in South Africa. So it was a very interesting proposition that she put on the table. Ultimately, I decided decided to go and apply for consulting firms. I knew nothing about the very competitive process that they use, including fit interviews and case interviews. And when I went through the process, I was very successful and ultimately got an interview and offer with Bain & Company. I got an offer with Bain in my final round. They let me choose the office that I would go to, and I chose the Atlanta office, where I joined for 2.5 years. I worked on 11 different companies in 10 different industries and had an amazing experience, which really launched my interest in bigger business and also in the corporate environment as well as entrepreneurship. So I wanted to blend the two things that I really cared about in my next venture. After I've left Bain, I've run 3 different companies. Management Consulted is my third. The first one was an energy technology startup. The second one was a payments technology company. And the third is Management Consulted. I've had a lot of success in business, but I also have a tremendous amount of fun, and I'm looking forward to sharing with you some of my insights about consulting today. As we get started, can I just have a show of hands? You can do this by pushing the hand button. For how many of you have been either are currently still in school at UVA or have been out for less than 2 years? Just go ahead and click the raise hand button in order to show me how many folks there are. Great, fantastic. Okay, and the number of you that are also in the 3 to 5 year range of being out of school. Okay, great. So we had 3 in the first one and 1 in the second one. Fantastic. And then what about those of you from 6 to 10 years out? Great, fantastic. Okay, 2. And then everybody who has been out of school 11 or more years, which includes me. All right, that's the bulk of us. Fantastic. Okay, great. Well, looking forward to speaking to you guys as an audience. It sounds like we have a lot of diversity in backgrounds, and we'll look forward to sharing just a little bit more about consulting from a lot of different angles because of the group that we've got here today. Like I mentioned, I do this presentation and others that are like it for groups of anywhere from first year in college all the way up through PhDs and folks that are working at companies like private equity firms that just want to understand a little bit more about how consultants work and think. So here's just a little bit of our company, the history of Management Consulted. We started in 2008. Our idea was that we would just make our lives easier as recruiters for some of the main consulting firms. I was on the professional staff, but at consulting firms, all professional staff are considered recruiters, and we answer a lot of questions from people on campuses and by email. And so the idea was to create a very transparent resource that people would be interested in to engage in the field of consulting. After gaining about 50,000 readers in just 6 months, we decided that we wanted to offer some things that our clients were asking for, which included Step 2 and Step 3, CV and cover letter editing. So we do extensive edits on both cover letters and resumes. We also do fit and case interview training, which helps people that are interested in going through the very competitive consulting process. Out of that, we birthed some self-study training materials. We have some best-selling books, including our Consulting Interview Bible, which is available both on Amazon and from our website. And we perform consulting boot camps. If any of you guys are interested in holding one of these boot camps, we have them for groups of 30 to 350 people. And we come to you and offer the boot camps for those groups. So if you're interested in doing that, just send me an email after the presentation. Basically, our clients are interested in the whole consulting process. So today I'm just going to talk a little bit over the course of the presentation about the full consulting process, resumes and cover letters, networking, both on the sales side and also on the side for getting into consulting, fit interview prep and case interview prep, what's required and what consultants are looking for and the actual skills, and then finally on-the-job skills training, what consultants are required to do. And ultimately, these are the things that we also help folks with. Our clients now work for people at the top consulting firms all over the world. We actually, every year, represent between 110 and 150 firms across the world. So we have a broad coverage and a lot of clients in every region of the world. So as this next slide is loading, some of you guys might be able to see it, but afterward, you'll see the slide come up again. If you want to work with us, we'll give you a discount code at the end of the presentation. But if you're interested in working with us at Management Consultant or working with me one-on-one, just do this, go to this link or send me an email directly, which we'll have up at the end of the slide. Fantastic. So let's dive into the core information. We should have most people that have joined us for the presentation now. So is consulting right for you? Many roads lead to consulting. As I mentioned before, you know, one of the roads that you could take to consulting is a road like mine, very convoluted, windy, where you discover first a passion for business and then ultimately network your way into consulting. Another great way to go through it is in a standard process where you're either at the undergraduate level or in an advanced degree program like an MBA program or a PhD program where you're walking through it. So let me just first of all walk you through what consulting is as a whole. I've dug a little bit into the history of consulting and found some interesting things, and I think that you might find them interesting too. The industry of consulting was founded at the turn of the 20th century, and some people like to say that consulting is one of the world's oldest professions, although not the oldest profession. And consulting was founded as a birth out of the public accounting industry. Public accounting really came into a rise as stock exchanges began, where you could buy shares in companies where you didn't know the owner, which was a very unique thing as the world became more globalized. And of course, today we've really continued this trend where you can buy shares in pretty much any company in any part of the world. But when the industry was founded, there were public accountants who were looking backward at the books for businesses. So they were saying, great, I'm interested in understanding whether your books are accurate or not, and whether you are therefore allowed to be traded on the public stock exchanges. Some of them that were very entrepreneurial in the course of looking at businesses' books said, hey, we're coming up with ways that we're identifying that you could perform better. And we're seeing multiple different companies and different industries that are all operating at the same time. So in order to do this, they began to offer their services along with public accounting services. And they said, here are the things that we'll do for you. First of all, we will research the industry that you are in because we see multiple companies in this industry, we believe we can give an objective opinion. We will also analyze your data and the data of your competitors in order to help you understand where you fit in the industry and where the industry is headed. And finally, out of these two activities, we will provide business advice for you. Now, ultimately, the focus of every consultant is to do one of three things. And by the way, there's a lot of jargon that is tossed around in the consulting industry, so this hopefully will help make everything a little bit more simple. First of all, consultants are focused on increasing sales. Second, they're focused on decreasing costs. And third, they're focused on building an organization that will help them do one or both of those things over a long period of time. I had no idea what consultants did when I joined Bain, and this is pretty hilarious because Bain is one of the top consulting firms in the world. I knew that consultants flew around in first class. I knew that they stayed in fancy hotels. I knew that they made a lot of money, but I didn't know what they actually did all day. So hopefully this will help give you guys a little bit of a leg up on what I needed to figure out in my first few months on the job. The way that I started to figure out how to explain this was actually I was flying in first class regularly to and from client projects, and the clients would wonder what this, you know, little sprite 24-year-old was doing sitting in first class. They would ask questions like, so what do you do for a living, or who do you work for? And really what they were saying is, why are you flying in first class at the age of 24? So that's how I discovered what these things were. Deliverables for consulting. The first deliverable and the ultimate deliverable is usually a final report. At Bain, we had a saying that was, we provide results, not reports, because again, over the years as consulting built up as an industry, the focus became on really building these final reports and turning them off to the client and then doing nothing afterward. And a lot of consulting firms are finding that it's very lucrative to actually continue the work with a client over time into implementation work. So that comes into these next two pieces. An operational model is the second giveaway. At the end of the project, basically you're turning what you did in terms of the analysis of the client's data or competitive data over to them in the form of usually an Excel model or access. Most of what you learn in consulting that becomes incredibly valuable in terms of tools later is actually how to think strategically and then build a data model that that actually reflects that that strategic thinking. Finally, the last piece is additional work. So a lot of consultants are very interested in rolling their project onto additional work. Does anybody have questions about this slide before I move on to the next one? Just go ahead and type it in the chat bar at the bottom. Okay, fantastic. Please jump in with questions as we go. So then the next thing that's helpful to know are who consultants are. Again, a lot of this came out of my discussions with people when I was trying to explain what I did. Most people would respond with, everybody that I know is a consultant. What kind of consultant are you? So hopefully this, again, will help you understand what kind of consultants different people are and also what type you may be interested in becoming. So the first thing that's important to distinguish are that there are consultants and there are contractors. One of the key differences between these is that consultants usually determine upfront what they will deliver for a client and then stop the work when that deliverable has been achieved. Contractors are usually working as a part of their time for multiple different firms, but there isn't usually a clear objective or a start or an end process. So a key example, even though both of them are called consultants, is the difference between a strategy consultant, which will usually work for 3 to 6 months on a project, and a contractor, which will work on an indefinite monthly recurring basis. These projects are classified by their project owner. So the CEO is usually, for someone who's working in strategy, they will be working for the CEO of an organization. Generally, they'll be working on one of the CEO's top three objectives. So if the CEO is to meet you in an elevator and you said, what are the three things that keep you up at night, the strategy consultant would be the one that would be focused on answering those questions with them. The second type of consultants that are very prevalent are financial advisory consultants. Financial advisory consultants are most popular in many of the big four consulting firms, and I'm going to talk about those in a few minutes. But basically, their focus is on, once the decisions have been made, defining where the resources exist in order to make something happen. This could be debt or equity inside a business. This could be cash that they're deploying towards something. It could also be focused on working with tax advisory in order to limit the tax variability. So the CFO, financial consultants work in the CFO's organization. The third most popular type of consultants are technology consultants. These are usually focused on implementation. So once the decision has been made for what to do and how to pay for it, these folks are able to actually build the technology from scratch or using source code that they have from something else in order to actually make that happen. Like I said, all of these are important in the ecosystem, and consulting is a very interesting way to get great experience across multiple industries. But perceptions in the industry do differ based on a number of the following factors. The first one is the price point. So generally, you'll find that the highest priced projects and therefore the highest paid consultants are the CEO consultants, the strategy consultants. Also, prestige. The types of problems that you're working on really depend on how sterile the problems are versus how complicated or in the weeds you are. Again, from strategy down to technology consulting, you're going to find that prestige usually exists at the higher levels when you're working for the CTO and less at the lower levels where you're working for implementation. And then finally, impact inside the organization. I've had a lot of people come to me over the years that are interested in breaking into a Bain or a McKinsey because they're interested in having more impact inside an organization. They're working for a consulting firm that's working on a part of the problem, whereas ultimately Bain or McKinsey are working on the overall problem, or they're working in a very forward-looking manner. So the impact that you have inside the organization, again, really depends on whether you're working on strategy, on finances, or on technology inside the organization. Again, if you guys have any questions, please just pop them into the chat bar. Usually we have a lot of questions that come up a little bit later in the presentation, but I'm happy to answer them throughout. So next slide, what is a consulting project? So a consulting project usually is defined at the start of the project, and what's defined is the scope. I was lecturing at Yale earlier this year, and somebody asked me in the classroom, he said, I had a summer internship with a technology consulting firm. On the same project, there was a BCG team, and BCG, Boston Consulting Group, was interested in sharing with us from the beginning of the start of the project exactly what they were focused on doing. One of the things that I noticed was that over the course of the project, I worked about 3 times as much as the Boston Consulting Group consultants. Why is that? And I said, well, probably what was different was the scope of your projects. When when a partner, the salesman of the consulting firm, sat down at the beginning of your project, the partner probably said, I will do everything for you. When the BCG partner probably sat down at the beginning of the project, they probably said, I will do the most important thing for your business. And that scope or the priority and the focus and the limitation of the work is really what's defined at the start of the project. The length of the project differs. So the scope determines what question is answered. The length is also determined at the beginning of the project for how long it will take to answer that question. And people who have been in consulting over time generally know what the complexity is of the problem that they're trying to solve. At Bain, I did all of the following except for technology cases. So I did private equity and hedge fund cases. These are usually due diligence where you're focused on helping one company determine whether they want to buy or invest in another firm. The second were strategy cases where we're basically asking what should a company do in the future. The implementation cases were how should a company do what has already been decided. And then technology cases were what technology do we need in order to make this possible. The construction of a team in a consulting project is very unique because if you go into normal industries, you will usually find that there is a hierarchy where you have a boss or a few bosses, and over time, they are the ones who are responsible for helping you decide and helping the company decide whether you should and will be promoted inside the firm. Inside consulting, there's something totally different that happens. You work with 4 to 10 member internal teams. At Bain, most of our team sizes were 6 people. The focus of these teams is to have one partner, one salesperson, and one project manager, and then the remainder are analysts, either post-MBA or post-advanced degree, or pre-MBA or pre-advanced degree. And the focus of these team constructions are to create a temporary environment for you to solve a problem for a client. They also provide what we call a 360-degree learning environment, where you learn from your peers, where you learn from the people who are more junior to you, which is anyone who started consulting after you did by 3 months or more, and anybody who's senior to you, which includes the project manager and the partner if you're one of the analysts on the team. In consulting, regardless of the type of consulting that you do, whether it's due diligence consulting or a focus on strategy consulting, you generally will work with these teams and the teams will rotate over time. And the focus of working with these teams is to create an environment that immediately has high impact inside an organization without really worrying about who's on the team and what skills they are. If you remember when I was talking earlier about the history of consulting, originally many of the CPAs that were focused on consulting were experts in the industry. Consulting has really moved away from that since the 1980s when it became possible to begin to train staff in the methods that one consulting firm would use to solve problems. So now, if I was at Bain, they would say, great, Jenny Ray, we're going to put you on a project tomorrow and you're expected to do this. And after the course of that process, I would have to be ready to be prepared to just jump in on any project at any time. Now, there is a training process that goes into consulting. And as we move to the next slide, I'm just going to talk a little bit about that. This slide is titled, Why Go Into Consulting? So a lot of people are very interested in it because it provides great training for business leadership. Many of the world's top executives were consultants at some point. Consulting, because you're standing from outside an organization, helps you understand what is legacy inside the organization that should stay and what you've seen that's better in other places that should go. So again, many chief executives are former consultants and were able to learn that toolkit very early on in their career. They also use tools in public, private, and nonprofit sectors. So consultants often go into consulting for a period of time in order to have a great skill set that they're able to use, not just to become a leader inside the private sector, but also to do something in sectors like the public sector or in nonprofit that helps them figure out what their goals are. So if you're interested in maybe running a nonprofit someday, consultants often go off and do something that is focused on entrepreneurship or public service or nonprofit work. Entrepreneurial training. Consulting is great training for also starting your own business. In fact, I would say that the success that I've had in business is directly related to the toolkit that I learned when I was in consulting. The only thing that it does not give you is the ability to take a risk. And in fact, consultants by nature, because they stand outside of the answers that are inside a company, often are very risk averse. In fact, ultimately, many people will ask me, why did you decide to leave Bain if it was so awesome and you're now working to get people into the firm? I really highly value my time at Bain. But when I looked around after receiving a promotion and was trying to decide whether I should stay for a longer period of time or not, I ultimately decided that I didn't want to become, over my career, more and more risk averse, that I wanted to be someone who was willing to take bold risks, and that was actually probably how I was made in the first place based on my history. So I feel like entrepreneurial training in terms of the skill set, yes, in terms of the constitution of an entrepreneur, not necessarily. Consulting also provides an accelerated career path if any of you are interested in jumping in early, like some of you that said earlier, or even in mid-career, like many of you that raised your hands later. You are provided with senior influence at a very junior level in consulting. In fact, basically, consulting years are like dog years. One consulting year is equivalent to 3 years in the industry. It also provides an excellent structure for professional growth. Remember how I mentioned earlier those teams that are composed of just random people that are thrown together, expected to work wonderfully together, and provide all the skills that are needed for a company? Well, for professional growth, consulting firms have the luxury of actually waiting longer to make you useful. In fact, usually it takes about 6 to 12 months to make a consultant incredibly useful. And the average lifespan of a consulting firm is about 3 years in the industry right now. So basically what that means is that a company invests in you for 1 year and then makes a lot of money off of you for 2 years later. So one of my friends that was going to Bain said, pay attention to how Bain runs its own internal operations. One of the best things that you'll learn from Bain is how it runs Bain. And I was very fascinated by this. One of the things that I noticed while there was that in terms of professional development, they're very active. Because you don't have a boss who's making the decision to stay or to have you stay or to have you go, they're doing a constant review process. In fact, at Bain, I received reviews at 1 month, at every project end, so I have had 11 total reviews at the end of a project, at 6 month interim, and at the 12-month mark. I had about 17 total reviews in my time at Bain. And the focus in all of the reviews was not in telling me how amazing I was. In fact, they spent a lot of time, even though I was a top performer, talking to me about what I wasn't doing well and what I needed to do better. So whereas in a normal company or industry, you're going to get a review maybe every 6 months, mostly every 12 months. You usually have 1 to 2 bosses. You usually have a limited scope of project work, and their focus is rather to have you be more and more narrow and more of an expert over time. Consulting really provides breadth and tremendous rapid professional growth. So that's a lot of the reason why many people are interested in going into consulting. Are there any questions about anything that I've talked about so far? You guys are being quiet. All right. So I'll move on to the next section. I'm going to talk a little bit about the landscape of consulting firms. So consulting firms 101, basically not all firms are created equal. It does not mean that any firms are necessarily better or worse than others, but there are some that are more competitive, that do pay more, that are also paid more by their clients, or that solve different kinds of problems. So hopefully this will aid your understanding if you are interested in going into a firm that offers consulting work. So basically, I break the industry down to three key sections. The first are top three firms. These are generally known as MBB, or McKinsey, Bain, and BCG. These firms all began starting in the 1950s, and then basically McKinsey was started in the 1950s, Bain was started in the 1980s, and then spun off also a private equity group called Bain Capital. BCG was founded out of a group of strategy consultants. And so the three firms really basically came to being in the last 60 to 70 years. Basically, in terms of the world stage, they're pretty young. In terms of consulting firms, they're quite old at this point. Even older than those are big four firms, so Deloitte, Ernst & Young, PwC, and KPMG, the now result of many, many takeovers and mergers over time in the public accounting space, also have large consulting practices. In the early 2000s, when Enron and the Enron scandal, and as well as major public accounting issues came to light, one of the key problems that had to come out of that was that many of the big four firms had to either divest from or totally separate their consulting practices, and they lost a lot of momentum in consulting over that time. In recent years, in the last actually 18 to 24 months, three of these firms have made very substantial acquisitions. Deloitte has bought Monitor, PwC has bought Booz & Company, now Strategy and as well, KPMG has just bought Parthenon Group. So there are key focuses for each of the groups on building back their consulting practices. In fact, public accounting is expected to be flat or only grow at about 2% over the next 10 years, whereas consulting is expected to see double-digit growth and is generally almost always higher margin than the audit work that these firms do. The Tier 2 firms are firms that focus on a specific vertical. So if you were to go and work for them, you need to know what they are known for. Because whereas at McKinsey or Bain, you may work on a project and then work on a project in a totally different industry and solving a totally different business problem. If you went to, for example, A.T. Kearney, your focus would generally probably be on supply chain or procurement. Now, you might do a general strategy project, but out of your 11 projects that you did while there, one of them would be strategy, whereas 10 would be implementation or procurement focus. And so each of these firms in the Tier 2 sector, which also represents basically every other consulting firm, picks one thing to become incredibly good at. They don't over-diversify early on in their process, and that's how they are able to penetrate into selling against some of the top firms like McKinsey or Deloitte Monitor. Now, moving on, any questions about that before we dive into whether you are right for consulting? Okay, great. So basically for consulting, even before you dive in, it's important to know that you need skills, experience, and a little special something in the process. So let me just dive through this. Basically, if you are right for consulting, these are some of the things that will be true of you. And when I'm talking about this right now, I'm talking about going into a firm that someone else established. I'm going to talk in a few minutes about how to establish your own consulting firm, which may be of interest to a number of you guys as well. So if you're right for consulting, the first thing that you need is a great education. Now, hopefully by nature of all of you being on this call, you all have graduated at some point from UVA. This is very exciting because UVA is a highly pedigreed school. In fact, UVA is generally recognized as one of the top global schools for consulting, along with Kellogg at Northwestern and Darden at UVA. Basically, those are the two top ranked firms for consulting, even higher than Harvard or Harvard Business School, even higher than Columbia or Columbia Business School. So UVA is a very, very highly rated school, and that penetrates all the way through the different programs, from medical program to the law program and the undergraduate program as well. If you're interested in consulting, they're also interested in what you studied for your education. This has more importance the closer that you are to your educational background. So if you're in that 0 to 2 year range, then the relevance of your degree really matters. They're interested in seeing not just business-focused work, so if you didn't go to the comm school, no sweat. You don't even need a degree in economics. They're just interested in something that had a little bit of a quantitative focus or quantitative coursework in general. They're just concerned if all you did was write papers, because as I mentioned before, one of the key takeaways for consulting are those data models. It's a heavily quantitative business. Even when you get into things like human resource consulting, it's very surprising to many people actually how quantitative it is. But the more expensive the work that you do for a company, the more they want quantitative justification for how it's going to impact their bottom line. So the relevance of your degree includes having quantitative coursework. They're also interested in seeing performance and top performance. So good GPAs and honors, which include scholarships or awards while you're at school. They're also interested in leadership. Consultants are generally one of the places in industry where being a jack of all trades and a master of none is a great thing. But they're interested not in just seeing involvement in 20 different things. They are actually interested in seeing leadership. So they're interested in seeing times outside of the classroom when you manage people or budgets and you've focused on doing something within an organization. The second thing that they're looking for is the experience side of the equation. So for experience, consulting firms are scaredy cats. They're risk averse. They generally like to see that you have some brand name experience. What this means is that you are likely a professionally groomed person. Now, I was not a professionally groomed person when I went into consulting. Like I mentioned, I shaved my head. I traveled around the world. And while I traveled around the world, I slept on buses and under bus seats, in fact, very classy places. I did not travel in luxury or in style. And when I showed up to the Ritz-Carlton for my sell weekend for Bain when they were trying to convince us to come, I had clearly had them fooled because I'd, you know, done everything right in the interview process. But I only had a backpack. I didn't even have another piece of luggage that I could bring. And so I walked into the Ritz-Carlton with a giant traveler backpack on my back. These are the kind of things that consulting firms are terrified of because it means that you may not be ready for their brand name, high-flying, work with CEO work. Okay, so if you did work for a brand name firm, they generally know that those kind of things aren't going to happen. Thankfully, I did get a piece of luggage before I started and showed up with a little bit more professionalism when I actually started on the job. My analytical ability was also something that was important to them. I had done some work in quantitative worlds. I've done that both in South Africa. I worked in the business that I ran with microfinance and with banking, but I also had done some analytical work in work that I'd done for a public relations agency as well as for a finance firm. So I had some analytical ability. I did not have brand name experience, I would say. Business understanding is something that in the experience category they're also interested in. This is especially if you're coming from like a heavy science background or law, they're interested in understanding how you understand how the work that you're doing impacts the company's bottom line. So, you know, they're not just interested in the actions that you take, but also the impacts of those actions. Usually every organization, a medical organization or a legal organization included, has some kind of business impact. Even public service organizations at the end of the day have a focus on some of the key issues that you might face based on needing to have more money in than money that goes out. So, you know, really the U.S. government is the only organization in the world that consistently operates at a deficit and seems to get away with it. And so this business understanding is very important because for private companies, they can't do what the U.S. government is able to do. The final thing that they look for in experience is distinction. They don't want you to be an unhappy employee at your current or previous jobs. They like to see that you're a happy employee who's looking for something better. So they're looking for you to have done well, to have been promoted, and to have been valuable in other environments, even if they're very different from consulting. Any questions about this slide? So just to dive a little bit more into those two categories, has my education or has my experience prepared me? We have in one of our documents on our website, it's called our consulting roadmap. You can download it for free as a subscriber to the website. It's a very, very rich document, which I would totally recommend. One of the things that we have in there is a scorecard for whether your education has prepared you. And we also have the same kind of scorecard, but different for experience. So what you'll see here in the education and experience sections are some different ratings. Basically, a target school answers the question for pedigree. Whether you had a relevant degree answers the question for whether you have some quantitative background, whether your performance was top performance, whether you also received honors. Basically, dean's list is considered nothing, essentially, or just very nominal, whereas something that's major or impressive, like a Fulbright scholarship, would be something that you would include in the performance honors. And then leadership, so whether you were the founder or president of a group or whether you were just on staff, basically, at another group. We also have a similar scorecard for the experience section, and so do I have relevant experiences focused on here? Basically, here the focus is on tier one experience, brand name experience. Like I mentioned before, if you did something in investment banking, worked for a multinational corporation, or did something in consulting for a name brand firm, that's generally considered tier one experience. Tier two experience is what I call relevant experience. Now, relevant experience here, the focus on that is basically on making sure that you have you have niche banking experience, you have niche consulting experience, you also have startup experience. All of these basically are where you're using the same skills that you'll use in consulting, research and analysis, Excel financial modeling, but you're not doing it for a firm that everyone would recognize. So it's unclear whether the caliber of your experience was super amazing or whether you were just getting coffee in the summer or over the previous work experiences. So in a resume or in an interview, you have more responsibility for explaining exactly what you did in these tier two irrelevant experience focus. Irrelevant experiences are things like what I did when I was in school. I was a wrangler on a ranch for one summer, and that was not something that needed to make it onto my resume or something that I ever talked about in business interviews. So there are other experiences that are not relevant. Hopefully you guys have at least some that would be considered relevant that help you both train in skills but also confirm an interest in business. And then the final measure that we have here is just a question of whether you're ready to start your own firm. So for those of you that are not interested in breaking into consulting and working for someone else and learning how they do things, you may be interested in starting your own consulting practice. I now, at Management Consulted, run a consulting practice that we have there. It's a very, very exciting way to travel the world and to have a pretty tremendous lifestyle. I'm a mother. I have a 2-year-old, and I also have a very, very thriving business that's global and international, where I get to travel and guest lecture. So consulting is one of the most family-friendly jobs once you have really established your practice. So there are a couple of things that are important to know about starting your own firm. If you're not ready, here are some of the indications. First of all, you'll have minimal experience that you bring to the table. Consultants generally have some kind of expertise if they're interested in starting their own firm. And so having experience really that's minimal is going to be a challenge for you to start a successful consulting firm. Also, to have had no brand name experience will be challenging. So you won't have something that you can offer to companies, and you also won't have the pedigree on your resume to explain it. Doesn't mean that you can't do it, just means that it will probably be more challenging. If you're ready to start your own consulting firm, usually you need a 2-year or more plan to be successful. Many consulting firms start a lot slower than people would anticipate. The sales cycle is very long, and then the work ultimately takes a lot to deliver while you're also simultaneously selling for other firms. So an over 2-year plan is really basically required for success in starting your own consulting firm. You also need a very lean team. You don't want to plan to start a consulting firm and pay a lot of salaries at the beginning without having work coming in the door. So having a lean team is something that's incredibly important. Basically, people who also have other projects or jobs that are happening at the same time can be very beneficial, because then you're able to just draw them in as work is increasing. And finally, great experience. If you have your own great experience where you can walk into a company, identify an issue, clearly scope what the problem is, tell them how you're going to solve it and know exactly how you're going to solve it for them, have a clear and constructive deliverable for them at the end, which would include a report or some kind of operational model, and a way to track some tangible results, you're going to be able to be a lot more successful. And a lot of that comes just by nature of being involved in consulting projects, by osmosis and training inside the firms. It is something that you can build over time.
Hey, there's several questions that have come in. I don't know if you want to handle those at the end or address them now.
Great. Any questions about this section here, where you stand or what you might need to do? I have not seen any of them, so definitely go ahead and, oh, here they are. They're hiding at the bottom of my page. Great. I'll go ahead and address them really quickly. So, Martha, your question was the best firm for technology consulting. Generally, one of the best firms recognized for technology consulting is Accenture, but another great one is IBM. They're both highly global. They have great brand names. They're very focused on the technology that they do, but they also have a strategy component to the technology, so you're often able to build really great expertise inside industries and also across industries, depending on where you want to go inside the firms. And you can feel free to send me questions about that offline afterward. Jack, you asked, coming out of an undergraduate degree, what do consulting firms expect in terms of experience? So absolutely, when you're directly coming out of an undergraduate degree, they're interested in seeing at least one substantial summer internship. When I say substantial, they would love to see some kind of brand name experience, and they're interested specifically in something that is business related, but it could be for Google or for, you know, Facebook or for the Gates Foundation, as well as for example, an iBank. So they're interested in seeing some of those, you know, branded experiences on your resume. If you are currently working and then, you know, interested in breaking into consulting, it depends. You can take two tracks. One is the track that I took, which was nothing purely professional. I mean, I started my own company, but it really wasn't something that was doing the same kinds of things that the consulting firms were doing. But in terms of, you know, other experience, something that they would consider particularly relevant, there was somebody, for example, in my class that came in at the same time who worked for GE Capital, using very similar skills, different ultimate focus on what they were doing. So that's something that you can think about if you're thinking about what kind of experience to build. basically, if you have no business experience, just business experience in general is a great way to get started, but brand name experience does kind of trump all early in your ultimate process. Somebody also asked a question about a law degree. Is it appealing or not to consulting firms? So at UVA Law, for example, the consulting firms all recruit, and they recruit very heavily, and they recruit there at the post-MBA level. So it's kind of one of the fastest tracks that you can get to. The highest salaries in consulting is actually to go into a JD. Critical thinkers, absolutely valuable, but they do expect exactly the same thing on your case interviews that they do from an MBA, so that a lot of times law students are great at going into the process. The skills are highly valued, but they have to do more training in order to be successful at breaking into some of the top consulting firms. The acceptance rate for all of you guys at the top consulting firms is under 5%. So of those who apply, it's under 5%. It's actually under 10% for those that actually go to the interview process. So you have a 90% chance of getting turned down for an interview and a 10% chance of getting selected. And then once that happens, it's a 5% chance of that number that ultimately gets selected. So it's a very, very small percentage of all applicants that ultimately break into some of the top firms like McKinsey or Bain. It is highly competitive, but as I mentioned, those JD skills are very relevant. Somebody asked, you know, I graduated in 2012. Is my GPA still relevant in the selection process? Absolutely. Consulting firms will look at even SAT scores for those of you who have been out for 10 or 15 years. They're interested in just seeing how you compare on metrics that they understand. GPA is one of them. If you don't have a good GPA, however, there are some ways to get around that. The most important way is to have great experience and excellent networking. For almost every single one of these consulting firms, once you are in the interview process, all of that goes out the window. So once you have an interview, the GPA doesn't matter. But getting the interview can be very challenging with a bad GPA. Somebody else asked a question about an average consulting salary. So on our website, we have a post on the salaries that are focused on consulting. And the average consulting salary for a McKinsey, Bain, or BCG consultant that is directly out of undergrad starts at about $75,000. Total compensation, including your 401k and your bonus, is about $100,000. Coming out of a MBA program, it's about $130,000 as your base, with a bonus target of about $40,000 every year. And then an additional 401k contribution, so about $175,000, the total compensation. It's attractive. It's not as much as investment bankers, so it basically trumps almost every other industry out there. At other firms, like if you scale down to the Deloitte's, usually it's about 10% less to start and a 20% slower escalation over time. So one of the things that's also differentiated about some of the top firms is that they pay more not only at the beginning, but they pay more quickly also over time. And then at the technology consulting level, you're usually looking at the MBA level at about $90,000. So you're looking at a significant drop-off, about 40% drop-off, and the focus there is on even slower escalation as well. It's just reflective of how much the firms are paid and how competitive the industry is. Somebody basically said, you know, how do you handle professional conflict with two clients in the same industry? At Bain, I can tell you how we did it. Different firms do it, but this is an incredibly important part of risk management practice for consulting firms right now. One key thing that happens is that while a company is being served, the partner that is on that company cannot work for any of their competitors. So they can have worked for a competitor in the past, but they cannot be currently working for a competitor. So different partners are required to be staffed on different projects. It is possible, however, for younger clients to work for one or the other, because generally the analysis that you're doing is unique, whereas the scope of the problem or the way to solve it may be the same. That analysis is actually different. So that's one of the ways that they control for it. Basically, though, you know, you would generally not work for two clients that are in the same industry on the same problem in the same given time. So if you're working for Dell Computers and HP, for example, on you know, for both of them, for one you might work on a supply chain problem, for another one you might work on, let's say, cost reduction in terms of, you know, procurement, the other one maybe just specifically for your actual delivery or your building process or your labor. So generally they just try to make sure that there isn't a direct conflict. There's plenty of work for many of these consulting firms out there. Somebody also asked a question that was very specific about city management. I'm going to take that one at the end, so I'm going to come back to that. Somebody said, what do you know about the turnover rate of the consulting hours? I'm going to address that one really quickly. The consulting hours are very, very busy when you first start because you're figuring things out. The consulting hours over time are different depending on the firms that you work for. McKinsey people work probably, I would say, the second to most in the industry. The folks that work the most are the folks that are at the financial advisory or the implementation firms that are really drilling on, you know, final last-minute projects, and you work on billable hours. For McKinsey, Bain, and BCG, they do not bill their hours, but they still do have to work because the work is very high pressure and high impact. To be honest, on average, while I was at Bain, I probably worked 30 hours a week. I was in the office for about 40 to 50 hours a week after I had been there for 1 year. And my first year, I was there for 60 or more hours a week because I had no idea what I was doing, and it took me a really long time to do just about everything. So the phase over the course of your life is very different. I would say that in general, consultants, the more that you are paid as a consultant and the more that the firm is paid, the more flexibility you have in terms of when you travel and where you travel. At Bain, I traveled about 50% of the time, and I watched a lot of partners, you know, fly home in the middle of the week to go to one of their son or daughter's soccer games and then fly back out to a client. So they weren't home 5 nights a week, but they definitely were home in a pretty significant basis. So hopefully that's helpful just in terms of the hours. Will consulting firms pay for you to pursue your MBA full-time if you commit a certain amount of years to them afterward? Yes, that is a standard industry practice. The consulting firms will allow you to go back, not only for an MBA, but also for other advanced degrees, although an MBA is generally the most attractive for them. They usually require you to commit to the same number of years that you spend doing your degree. So if you spend 5 years on a PhD, they expect you to commit 5 years afterward. If they spend 2 years on an MBA, then they expect you to spend 2 years afterward. It's pretty amazing because the price points are very different for those degrees, but that is generally the focus. So that should handle all the questions that are there right now. Hopefully you guys will keep asking me some questions as I finish up the core presentation. So what should you be doing now? We have a couple more slides that I'm going to focus on. Basically, you know, consultants plan and plan and plan. They plan their plans and then they replan their plans. So if you're going to be a consultant, either your own or something else, you're going to have to be a pretty strong planner. Here are a few pieces of the timeline. The first part of the timeline is that you need to begin to research the consulting industry long before you're interested in breaking in. What I've got going on here, this focus in the middle, this August and September timeframe, is basically a key focus for making sure that you've got this area for basic, you know, full-time recruiting and when it happens. So this is centered around this August and September timeframe. And the focus for these is on making sure that you know that you have to start in advance for a number of things. Researching the consulting industry, which today can be part of, networking, breaking into the actual industry, which can also be a piece of it, identifying target firms or application dates, so making sure that you have firms that are in your scope that you're interested in focusing on. If you want to apply for firms, there are over 175 in the world, so you probably don't want to focus on all of them at the same time. So focusing on the ones that you think are the most likely for you, where you also have contacts, is important both for the networking process and the application process. Preparing your resume and cover letter, because it is so competitive, you know, 10% of people get interviews. It's just crazy, such low numbers. You know, it's really, really imperative that a great resume and cover letter go out the door. And cover letters for consulting, just to interject, we have a whole presentation on cover letters, which we're not going to get to today. They are not supposed to be super unique. They just need to be clear and very well written. It's actually almost impossible to do that. And so a good basic, well-written cover letter actually is a good differentiator. Prepare for case interviews, which I won't really talk about a lot today. I'm just going to conclude talking about the interview process in a second, but case interviews are oral business exams that are conducted by consulting firms of every shape and size if you're interested in going to work for them. And the case interviews are very different. There are a lot of nuances to them. It's one of the scariest things about the process of getting in, but also one of the most fun ways to determine whether you really want to do consulting or not. And then info sessions, if you're in an on-campus program or attending them as an experienced hire, dropping your resume, and then preparing for your fit interviews and interviewing ultimately. You know, basically next steps that you will determine are based on the things that you have focused on and where you came out of on the consulting roadmap scorecard. So if you're sure that consulting is right for you, your focus is on preparing for interviews. I generally recommend people take 3 to 6 months to prepare for interviews. If consulting is a possibility, you're focused on major networking. So if you think there's one weakness at least in your background, like there certainly was with mine, then your focus is on networking into the industry, getting to understand what people are actually doing all day and how you need to best position yourself in order to get in. If consulting is a stretch for you, your focus is to get more relevant experience right away or a new degree. And if consulting is unlikely now, your focus is on making a long-term plan, which may include further business education, for example. Great. Just as I'm handing, as I'm heading into the last process, basically, the consulting interview process. We have 3 things here: networking, a fit interview, and the case interview. These are really the 3 key pieces for evaluating whether somebody will be a great fit for consulting. And ultimately, it goes back to that first chart when I was talking about the experience and the education. The things that consultants look for are the ability to resolve conflict with anyone, anywhere, the ability to solve problems using heavy analytics, the ability to relate very quickly and easily to just about anyone that you meet, and the ability to communicate clearly. So as you're going through this process, networking is one of the ways that they screen people who are not able to do those things. The fit interview is the way that they test you on your understanding and your reflection on your background, and they're generally the hardest interviews that you could imagine having. Even harder than that is then the case interview, which goes into a very extensive dissection of your ability to understand a business problem. It's a sterilized case that takes anywhere between 15 and 45 minutes. Some of them even involve presentations that you have to prepare. And the case interview process is something that a lot of people underestimate, which is one of the reasons why the take rate in the industry, even after the 10% are selected for interviews, is only 5%, just because many people go into the process not understanding the core basics of business or how to prepare. So as we kind of finalize the presentation today, I'm going to take some remaining questions. I see 2 that popped up on the chart, the one that I didn't answer before and a new one. If you guys have any further questions that you want to ask, definitely make sure that you ask them in the next few minutes. If you are interested in working with us at Management Consulted to either break into the industry or to help us have us identify where you are, we have something called a Power Half Hour where we spend 30 minutes with you on the phone just assessing where you are and your background. We also do one-on-one fit and case interview training. You could grab one of our books or our resources that are online, or you can just come check out our website, become a reader, and make sure that you follow along with what we're doing in the consulting space. Just before we conclude, I do have a discount code for those of you that are interested in it, and it will go out in an email afterward, but if you want to write it down, it's just UVA25, and this discount code will work for anything on our website for the next 24 hours, so until midnight Pacific time, which is where I'm located in California, midnight Pacific time tomorrow night on Saturday night. And if you're interested in working with us directly, you can also send me a direct email. JennyRay@managementconsulted.com is my email.
Jenny, okay, I'm going to pop in for just a moment.
Q&A.
I want to remind everyone that Jenny Ray is staying online for more questions, please stay with us. But I did want to pop in and give Jenny Ray a big thank you for her very helpful webinar, and we greatly appreciate you sharing all that information with us, Jenny Ray. And I also want to let everyone know that our next Friday Forum will take place in 3 weeks on Friday, December 12th, when Chanley Bryan returns to Friday Forums to share what you need to know about your professional online presence. So again, we're going to get back to Jenny Ray, but I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate you spending your time with us. As always, we have been recording today's webinar, and we'll continue to record it, and everyone who registered will receive a link to the webinar recording in an email later today. Also, please remember to complete the Friday Forum survey. Now back to Jenny Ray for a few more questions.
Fantastic. Great. So I'm going to start with Richard's question, which I skipped over earlier. Richard just said, you know, I'm winding down a career in city management, focus on local government management. Is consulting a second act potential career? Definitely. In fact, this is one of the areas that in our business we are really focusing on in the next 24 months, are helping people start consulting firms or go into consulting firms as experts. And so a career in city management, you know, one of your focuses could be potentially working as a consultant for a firm that works with city governments in a sector that you were focused on. So if it was something that we're working on, for example, city services, or whether you're working on finance for cities, you know, talking about leveraging those skills over working for another firm or setting up your own consulting practice based on your own expertise and success in city management can also be a great way to do it. You would fit in that category of being ready because of great experience, but you also need to make sure that you have an awesome team and at least a two-year plan. So that would be something, Richard, if you want to send me an email afterward, then I'd be happy to answer those specific questions about it. Somebody asked if I know of any firms that are a good fit for retired military officers. Actually, we have a section on our website that's called Firm Profiles, and we do these in-depth, hopefully kind of funny, reviews of each of the different firms. They're very honest. We tell you why you should work for a firm or why you shouldn't. But one of the sections in there, we talk about affinity groups. Those include things like LGBT groups. One of them is military groups. And at Bain, we actually have a group for ex-military folks that is comprised of all the folks that are ex-military inside Bain. And it's a networking group, so they give you better access to people inside the firm. It's a support group in the training process, and it's also a professional support group once you become a part of the firm to transition successfully in. So firms like the top ones are great places for retired military officers. Probably the very best firm is Booz Allen Hamilton, which is a firm that is focused on largely major government contracting or government procurement. And they work largely with the federal government. But another great place would be Deloitte's Federal Practice. So there are top places that are just, you know, ripe with military officers, but there are also places in many of the different firms that are very welcoming to them as well. Jack, you also asked, you know, what do you mean by the networking bubble and the interview funnel? Is this networking once you've been offered the interview? No, networking is basically a part of the evaluative process for consulting, and many people treat networking as something that is outside the interview process, but everything that happens in networking is actually chronicled for the company, and basically if there are any issues that come up in networking, if there's anything uncomfortable that happens, or if they feel like you're just not a great fit in the networking process, you will never get to the interview phase. So I include it in there because I think it's very important for people to know as a part of the process. Wendy, you asked the question, you know, does it make any sense to create a self-owned consulting firm, or would potential clients see that as a risk? If you are self-owned, that's absolutely fantastic, and potential clients wouldn't necessarily see it as a risk depending on what your service offering is. That, again, may be something that you want to spend 30 minutes with us on. That could be a great topic for a power half hour, but if you have a service to offer that is very clear, that has a very clear and deliverable, then that's a fantastic option for you. Somebody said, my best advice for an industry expert starting their own business, don't spend too much money in the starting process on the wrong things. A lot of people think when they've come from industry that they need to recreate their same environment, so they'll get a big office with lots of fancy furniture, and they'll fly around, and they'll kind of do everything in the same way that they did it before. But really the focus is on getting your first client, on operating in a very lean way, and on getting great results for that client. And sometimes that happens, you know, out of a basement office or something that's very different from what it will look like. So spend money, but just make sure you spend it only on the most important things that ultimately lead to revenue generation. Somebody also asked, Kristen, is the process and everything I've covered the same for brand consulting? And are there any firms that I can recommend? So brand consulting is very similar. The cases are not operational cases. They're very focused on, hey, you know, if this company had this brand problem, what would you do? I call them situational cases, which is true of many other types of firms. But generally, you do have a case interview process, a fit interview process, a networking process, a resume drop. All of those evaluation processes are very much the same. There are some brand consulting firms. We don't work with people who are applying to those as much because they're usually focused on firms and schools that are only located in major cities. But they can be fantastic opportunities to grow. The only issue is that you have to recognize that usually at a brand consulting firm, you are downstream a little bit.
It's so looking like that's brand about all for today.
What they want to sell,
well, thank
they
you again for Alumni Career Services for UVA's Alumni Association.
Can be really
please join us again in 3 weeks for our next Friday forum. And have a wonderful weekend and a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you so much, Jenny Ray.
Absolutely. Thank you, Marianne.